Transportation Committee will come to order. Welcome, everybody. Pat, look at my agenda. So we have two House bills. We have House Bill 3121, do we?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Madam Chair, we do not. If I could, Madam Chair, we received today dash one amendments for House Bill 3121. They make some changes to the measure. The committee get an explanation of those changes, I believe, if they'd like. But since we received them today, we submitted fiscal and revenue impact requests. So we're kind of talking about whether or not you should. We received a dash one amendment and have submitted fiscal and revenue requests for the dash one amendment, but have not received that those back. However, we can, if it's the committee's desire to move that bill by suspending the rules, move it to the floor.
Okay. I'm going to go ahead and do I have to open up the discussion to carry over? No. I'm going to go ahead and carry over House Bill 3121 to tomorrow. And committee, we have a 1 o'clock meeting tomorrow to get House Bill 2001 out. And I know that people have busy schedules. So what we're going to need is we're going to need to let Patrick know where you're going to be so that we can get you in here for
I'm
going to
be here.
Votes.
We have
okay.
a committee at 1.
Oh, I don't know where we're
going to
be.
Oh, I see what you're
going to
say.
We're going to have a committee at 1, but I don't know.
It'll be in hearing room B, Madam.
Okay, hearing room B.
B.
And so if you'll let Patrick know where he can find you during that time, okay, so we can bring you in. And House Bill 3379, I'm going to carry this one over. We're still missing a fiscal on this one, and we'll give them until tomorrow to come up with it. So I'm going to hold those two bills over and open a work session on House Bill 2001. And Patrick, I am going to explain the dash 7. And you can explain what, again, we're talking about.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2001, this measure we've heard for most of the last week or so, it's the vehicle by which the committee will be moving a transportation package this session. We previously had considered dash 2 amendments, dash 4 amendments, and dash 6 amendments last week, and I believe the chair is going to explain the dash 7s, which by my reckoning incorporate all three of those. So.
Thank you, committee. Representative Terry Beyer, House District 12, and I'm here, and Patrick just explained a little bit about what's going on with the dash 7s. They do incorporate what we went over last week, and then we've added some more to it. And you should have kind of the cheat sheet on what's included in this one. So I'm going to have to look at my own little notes. So the changes in this bill include the really start at section 16 and 17. And this is the, as I'm looking through my, okay, this one is the section that updates the STIP, the statewide transportation improvement program project. And there's a lot of language in there on asking the commission to work with stakeholders to review and update the criteria used to select projects within the statewide transportation improvement program. And it outlines a number of the things that whether or not these should be considered when the projects are updated. So that's section 16 and 17. And when you go to section 18, this is some inclusion of programs that the department is already doing. And it's environmental stewardship, and it directs the department to continue these programs, to work with state and federal environmental regulatory agencies to improve environmental permitting process for state highway construction projects in order to reduce the time required to design projects and obtain permits, and to reduce the cost and delay associated with redesigning projects. So this is, again, something ODOT already does, and we're asking them to continue to do this as they work into this projects that are and new funding that they go forward with projects around the state, as I'm making a lot of sense. So section 19 is the dash six amendments, which were somewhat explained. This is the practical design language. And it goes into section, that was 19 and 20. And this really just says that they should be able to incorporate flexibility in the application of standards. If an example would be, say, you're building a road across an area that's just solid rock. Do you need 3 inches of gravel on top of that? Do you only need a smaller amount? Or, you know, it gives them some flexibility on what the design standards are. Always remembering safety and longevity and durability of the projects, but gives them a little bit more flexibility and ways to reduce costs if they can do that. Section 21 is a section that talks about federal flexibility funding. These are federal dollars that we get that can be used for things other than highway. And this section says that we will reserve up to, and at this point it says $30 million of that flexibility fund, which is not as much as had been included in the governor's package. Given that this package probably will be significantly smaller, this is a more proportional number to what we'll be looking at. And these can be used for planning, non-highway uses. It can be used for capital. And I can answer a question if somebody has one.
Oh, I'll wait till you. Okay. Mr. Chair, I'll wait till
And the rest of the bill, we've looked at before. It's just been renumbered. The sections have been renumbered as we've been adding things to it. So, given that.
Are you finished? Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, as I said to you earlier, just moments ago, there's some things in here I like a lot. The subsection 5 of section 1, speaking to legislation introduced to the next legislative assembly based on these recommendations, calms my nerves greatly. And then on the section 18, as I was reading it before we came in, the language looked familiar, and I said, I think we're already doing that. And Representative Edwards, great, I spoke to him about it, and he said, yes, we are, that's already something in statute somewhere relating to transportation. And then on the section 20, I believe it was, the practical design, which I think is a great idea, does that include, do you know, specifically programmatic permitting? For example, if you remove and replace a culvert to enhance and increase and actually restore fish passage on one culvert, would it be practical design to, say, do the same thing on the next project? Is that inside that language?
Yes, Chair Call and Committee. It could be. It really, what that application that you're talking about is really in Section 18, which is the environmental stewardship, and that's the program that they're already doing, where they are developing a design for culverts, mm-hmm. and then using it when they're replacing culverts all over the state, or a design for a bridge. So it's really more in 18, but it could also be encompassed. And 18 is current practice. I don't think it's currently in statutes.
Okay. Thank you.
And then,
and I just want to thank you for your patience, Madam Chair, and all the people that have worked on a lot of great work on this, patience with me, and I really appreciate the due diligence. And I look forward to supporting the amended version of the bill.
Representative Bailey, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd echo Representative Schaffler's comments. Madam Chair, I have a quick question on Section 19 on the practical design.
Mm-hmm.
Is this intended for flexibility in terms of construction materials and designs? I'm just not familiar with this concept. Is that what the intention is, to look at ways of doing the project such that it's cheaper or fits local realities, or does it involve sort of the larger planning and land use context of the design?
Well, and there is somewhat of an explanation on this sheet that the under it's on the second backside of that sheet that consider congestion relief, safety criteria, technological innovations, multimodal connections, freight mobility, economic development, cost benefit, livability, community standards. Oops. Sorry, I'm on the wrong one, aren't I?
Mm-hmm. Looking at the second.
That's the STIP, sorry.
Right.
And I saw that somewhere. Practical design is on the front. There it is. Instead of using one-size-fit-all approach to all projects within one classification, practical design requires designers to start looking at projects on a case-by-case basis instead of strictly adhering to standards. And I think it probably could encompass some of the things you're wanting to know. I think it will be built to the needs, not necessarily to the highest standards used if there is an unlimited budget. So if you've got lots of money, you might design it for 30 years out. Or if you don't necessarily need that length of time, you can design it for to last a shorter period of time. And that obviously safety is always going to be on the forefront with ODOT, so that's never going to be compromised as they implement any of our suggestions.
And Mr. Tindall, didn't he speak to this last Friday?
Yes.
And said that this didn't undermine any of the land use, environmental, or other policies that are in regulations. This is very narrow.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Yes, and people in the audience, there will be another set of amendments tomorrow. At least one other set of amendments tomorrow. It seems like they're multiplying like flies, but beyond that, that should pretty much encompass most of what we're doing. So I'm looking forward to that day. Okay. And we have a number of other sets of amendments, and we'll let people come up and speak to them. And I don't know if we want to. Okay, we'll just go numerically, and we have the Dash 8 amendments. And Mark Nelson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing Enterprise Rent-A-Car. I apologize for being one of the flies in terms of an added amendment. As I've spoken to many of you, currently under Oregon law and practices, rent-a-car companies do charge for the cost of title and registration as part of their normal daily renter charge. In other states, it has become apparent that some rent-a-car companies are using vehicle and title registration fees as a reason to have a separate a profit center, as we say, on the rental agreement to charge for these particular items. And what this amendment does is make it clear in statute that you have to that can impose a surcharge in a rental agreement reasonably calculated to cover the costs incurred by the car rental company to register and title rental motor vehicles. About 18 to 20 states now have made this clear, have used this type of language in an effort to preclude that kind of activity. So it's a very simple amendment. Again, legislative council indicated, right now they believe that obviously this is what we're doing now is legal. This just protects against the other adverse activity. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Representative Berger, then.
Thank you. Mark,
Edwards.
Is this language, is this intended as a protection from the compute, for the consumer, for a profit center that they wouldn't know was there? Is that the purpose of this?
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, that's correct. It is intended to make it clear that whatever is calculated in the rental car charge for these particular items, that it can't be used as a separate profit center to charge more than what it does cost.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Nelson, is there a statutory definition or kind of extra legal common understanding of the term reasonably calculated?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, not to my knowledge. When we had actually some extra language when we met with counsel, their first response, and if I remember right, there was a memo to the chair or to, I think, Representative Schaffler, who had requested the amendment at our request, basically saying, we don't think you need to do this. We had a more like expansive definition, and she chose not to use that.
And did I see Schaffler?
Thank you, Mark. Under this, the car rental company, the company can impose a surcharge to recoup these costs, but this is not a tax. This is not a revenue generator for the state or any other government. This is strictly permissive language for the rental car company. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, that's absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Well, then I have a question. Thank you. Are the car rental companies already doing a surcharge in the state of Oregon?
Madam Chair, my understanding, all the rental companies in Oregon simply include it as part of their daily price. It is in other states that they have, some companies have chosen. None of the companies that I am aware of in Oregon, but other companies in other states have chosen to take this other route and list it as a separate charge.
Okay. Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, one more comment. I think what bothers me about this amendment that a car rental company may impose a surcharge. Is there some way that you could turn this language around and say a car rental company may not impose a surcharge in excess rather than may impose? Do you understand what I'm saying? It's the language of this that bothers me.
Yes.
It sounds permissive of gouging, and yet you're sitting there and giving me testimony that it's permissive of preventing gouging.
Right. Madam Chair, Representative Berger, I mean, we could change it.
I think there would be far less headache about this language if it were reversed. Maybe that's just my feeling about it, but in reading it the first time, I didn't get the impression that you are conveying that that's what this language is intended to mean.
Thank you. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so I understand, just to follow up on Representative Berger's question, currently are the car rental companies prohibited from doing this?
Madam Chair, Representative Benz, no, and that is council's position. They are allowed to charge for the cost, and they do so in Oregon in their daily contracted rate. What we're trying to do with the amendment, and Representative Berger has pointed out, maybe it's not as strong as it could be, that to prevent what has occurred in other states, that is, to charge more than the price or the cost of your vehicle and registration fees in a contract.
Follow up. Yeah, I would agree. It could be more clear if that is the purpose of it.
Yeah.
All right. I don't see any other questions, so I think maybe we should take a look at it and make sure that we get everybody comfortable before we consider it. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And the Dash 9 amendments, and that is David Barenberg.
Chair Beyer and members of the committee, I'm David Barenberg from the City of Portland. Before you are the newly minted Dash 9 amendments. What these would do is provide an opportunity for a city to, well, a city over 500,000 to be nameless, to try something innovative. It would provide authority for the city to do a vehicle registration fee for the city residents based on vehicles mile traveled. The idea of using VMT has been experimented with, and what this would do would be to allow for continued experimentation and something that could be decided and worked through at the local level. As you'll notice in the language, it provides the ability for the city to work with the Department of Transportation as well as the Department of Environmental Quality on this project, and also for this city, for those state agencies to be reimbursed for their expenses in doing this. So this doesn't require a program. It permits a program, lets discussions to continue at a local level, and allows for some innovation on a new approach. And as we look at transportation funding, I think we all realize that existing mechanisms are not going to work for the long term, and we think that the cities can be the laboratory for democracy on some of these issues and for innovation. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions, and thank you for the opportunity to appear today.
Representative Call.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Barenberg, can you tell me how you envision this potential program fitting together with the proposed pilot for congestion pricing within the Portland area? Just want to know how the City of Portland envisions these two policies working together, if there is a vision. If there isn't, I can understand that too, and you don't have to answer.
Chair Beyer, Representative Call, being a lobbyist, I generally always have an answer, sometimes not a good one. But no, I think, seriously, in terms of how this works together, I think that there are different pieces. And this is, you know, clearly looking at the registration aspects. The pilot that's being looked at for congestion will, you know, deal with different mechanisms for collecting and assessing fees based on time of usage or as it's developed. This provides another tool, and I think what will clearly happen is that there will be discussions to try to make sure that there's a system that functions in concert with one another in the metropolitan area. I think having tools to be able to experiment with different mechanisms is really going to help us identify what will work to the future. And we've had lots of discussions on these tools and some smaller pilots, but we think that it's time to start discussing using them in a different and more cohesive way.
Thank you.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Barenberg, could you just describe a little bit? We've had a lot of informational testimony on the VMT concept, specifically related to the technological mechanism that I believe that the pilot study has used. It looks to me like this is a method to roll this into the registration fee of the vehicle. Could you just describe a little bit where you see this pilot going and how that compares to some of the other things that we've done?
Thanks. Chair Beyer and Representative Bailey, I think that there is a tool that's provided, and then there'd be more discussion as to ways of implementing it. There are a whole range of ways that this could be implemented, from the first being doing an intergovernmental agreement with the Department of Environmental Quality, where there are the inspections for vehicle emissions required every 2 years to do a reading at that point, so as to not require additional technological devices within automobiles. There's an ability to say you have tiers for a certain number of miles and then another for a certain over, and so to have some fairly condensed, not needing readings that were exact over time. I think that there are different options in pursuing that, and I think what this does is really pushes forward the discussion on how to do it. And I think the attempt would be to try to figure out mechanisms that are the least costly and are the simplest technology to try to get there.
Representative Schaffler.
Madam Chair, I've learned a lot about this concept of vehicle-mized travel. I'm interested in creating a statewide policy after we learn more about it and learn how we can put it together and implement it and actually make it work. I'm not too keen on one city doing it, though. Thank you.
Okay. Do I see any other discussion? No? Thank you.
Thank you.
And now I have the dash 11 amendment. And Bob Stacey, and I don't know if you want anyone else up with you or...
Madam Chair, Bob Stacey, 1000 Friends of Oregon. I know that Councillor Hostica from Metro is here to provide testimony on behalf of Metro on this, but no one else is asked to be up here and share the spotlight.
All right. So would Councillor Hostica like to come up? There he is. I didn't see him back there.
I should move over.
Should I get to your left or to your right?
Whatever you choose, Councillor.
Welcome. Go ahead.
I could proceed by describing the amendment, Madam Chair, and then deferring to Councillor Hostica. Chair Beyer, members of the committee, on your hearing, it's your hearing on Thursday evening of last week. I participated in a panel that included the home builders, AOC, and the cities, describing the Metropolitan Planning Organization-based planning process for greenhouse gas reductions and language that had been drafted and shared with those organizations to achieve that. On Friday midday, I had the opportunity to visit with the planning director for the city of Hillsboro, planning director for Washington County, and explore with them some concerns they had about timing and phasing of that planning, given other planning responsibilities that are underway in the Portland metropolitan area, and the more general concern that we not have a lot of prescriptive time limits in the legislation, given that Salem Kaiser, Eugene Springfield also have planning processes underway, and it would be better to time this to interact positively rather than disrupt planning that's already occurring. What these amendments, as drafted by Legislative Council now, do is reflect those conversations as well, so that with the exception of an initial deadline for Metro to do some alternative scenarios that can be shared with the 2011 legislature as a demonstration of how this work looks, the other deadlines are all set by LCDC in rulemaking. So decision-making by Metro to adopt a specific planning approach for greenhouse gas reduction would be later and in accordance with that schedule. And after that, there would be time for the local governments within the Metropolitan Service District to adopt their changes. Similarly, there are extensions of time for Springfield Eugene and Salem Kaiser to develop modeling capabilities and start using those. And then they would follow in accordance with a schedule set by LCDC rules with full participation by local governments in that rulemaking process. And in fact, the rules for that schedule are delayed until later in the 6-year period that was originally contemplated in the amendments, so that there's more time for that kind of dialogue to occur. So what we have here are amendments that establish the broad outlines of the greenhouse gas reduction planning process, the objective of achieving the legislature's 2007 greenhouse gas reduction targets for the transportation sector, or rather that part of the transportation sector that is cars and light trucks, and to use land use planning tools to help communities accomplish those reductions. And deadlines and mechanisms are deferred to rulemaking in which those local governments that will be affected and will be doing the planning will have a full voice and an opportunity to set deadlines that work for their communities. There are a couple of cross-references in this material that need to be corrected because of your consideration of the Dash 7s. Should you adopt the Dash 7s, the reference in here to a Section 3, sorry, I'm going to make a specific page and line citation. Page 3 of the Dash 11s, line 10, refers to funds described in Section 3 of this 2009 Act that should now refer to Section 21 of this 2009 Act as reflected in the Dash 7 amendments. That's the section that specifies that federal flexible funds can be used for non-highway purposes. The intent of this subsection is to say that one of the non-highway purposes can be to help local governments do this planning. Mr. Schlack from the Association of Counties testified to your committee, as well as to the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Transportation, that in order to do this work, it will be necessary for cities and counties to have planning resources. That's true of Metro as well. I expect you'll hear that from Councillor Hostica. If we're going to be doing this kind of planning, it is eligible for federal transportation funding. This is a direction to utilize some of those funds to expend it. But the reference should be to Section 21. And this Section 3 in the current draft, which shows up at page 5, lines 8 through 15, should be stricken from the draft as surplus in light of the similar language in the Dash 7 amendments. I know you've just seen these. They've just come out of Legislative Council. I would be happy now or later to answer the questions you have about the content.
Representative Schaffler.
Madam Chair, when I said I would support the amended version, I was referring to the Dash 7s. Upon looking at this, it takes me right back to my concerns about plans being adopted by fairly large parts of the state, asking the state to help pay for all kinds of stuff without, I just don't see enough legislative oversight in this. It's got dragging land use into it. I know they are linked at the hip. I understand that completely. But I think I cannot see myself supporting this amendment or the bill with this amendment in it. Thank you.
Any other questions for now? Representative Call.
And I guess I should go on the record as saying that I don't disagree with Representative Schaffler's concerns. I do wish we had a statewide policy that said every road that we build in this state, every project that we undertake through ODOT had greenhouse gas emissions requirements on it, and that no vehicle, no road built would not be regulated under that standard. This bill represents a compromise because we can't have that bill. This amendment represents our capacity in the largest population centers where those population centers want to effectuate a policy to stem the tide of greenhouse gas emissions and the effects caused by those emissions, global climate change. And to the extent that we have a transportation package, it is my sense that we cannot, from my perspective, have a transportation package that does not address in some significant way greenhouse gas emissions and the threat of global climate change. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Berger.
Yeah, I just got these for the first time, too, and I'm struggling to get a handle on it. But from my understanding of what you said, it isn't whether those metropolitan organizations want to. It's when under this. It's a matter of timing, not a matter of whether they want to or not. And I'm getting nods from here.
Madam Chair,
they will do it under this on this timeline, whether they want to or not.
Madam Chair, Representative Berger, that is correct, Bob Stacey, with the exception that I would take to your statement that there is no longer a timeline that is specific in this legislation requiring specific enactments by a specific date, but timelines would be established by LCDC in rules.
In rules, yeah. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, to Representative Schaffler's comments, I would just point out two provisions. On page 4, line 27, I think it's section 2, subsection 11, sub D, which basically ensures that the rules and models that are adopted ensure that they will not subject potential projects to standards or procedures that would result in unreasonable denials of projects. And then on the back side, the last page, page 6, line 5, that in 2013, basically all the parties involved in developing the model and the resultant outcomes would be responsible for reporting to the state legislature, presumably for review of the work completed and potential recommendations for extending the modeling that was developed for the MPOs to the remainder of the state. So there are a number of safeguards in here, I think, that protect localities from unreasonable rules. And I know that my city and county, both of which are very active on this bill, are comfortable with the existing language. I would say that Washington County, as the economic engine for the rest of the state, you know, if there are going to be any issues with this in terms of unnecessary impediments to economic development, it would certainly certainly be voiced by my city and county.
Representative Baylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is some good discussion and good debate on this proposed amendment, and like everyone else, I'm also just getting it. But it would seem to me that part of the intention here in this amendment is, as we discussed the other night, efficiency, and that we have likely a million more people moving just to the Portland metropolitan region, and that as we have that population moving here, that we need to have the modeling and the planning capabilities to be able to account for the changes both in land use and transportation that come with development and settlement and population changes in that metropolitan area, as well as other MPOs that are named in this amendment. And that at the end of the day, if it is a something that costs a little bit more, that we may make up for that with our with the efficiency that this brings us in our planning process. Is that a somewhat accurate characterization?
Madam Chair, Representative Bailey, Bob Stacey. Yes, I think it is, Representative Bailey, not only because it favors my position. The opportunity the opportunity to do this planning in the three largest areas of the state where the most significant percentage of population growth will occur is the opportunity to take advantage of all that change. And it's change in land use patterns, along with more efficient cars and more efficient fuels, that give us opportunities to reduce greenhouse gases from the transportation sector. When people are able to choose to live close to where they work or shop, if they're able to choose between alternative transportation choices, walking, biking, short driving trips, and transit, because of where their neighborhoods are located and how they're designed, that's where we get the opportunity. In most communities of the state, our opportunities to achieve greenhouse gases will come either from improving transit service or through the improvements in the vehicles that people use, because population growth will not be a significant part of the increase in greenhouse gases. But in the growing areas of the state, it'll be important to take advantage of planning for those changes so that we can maximize the efficiency of our existing investment.
Representative Schaffner.
And I would submit to you, Mr. Stacey, that we're already doing all of those things. Matter of fact, we've moved legislation relating to cars, efficient cars, alternative fuels, efficient fuel, countless bills, countless pieces of legislation over the last two sessions. And this state is already, as been stated, I believe, by you and others, a leader in the land use and transportation. I really don't think we need all this, in my humble opinion. And not only, but that isn't why I'm against it. I want to have some, I'm not going to abdicate my job here to when it comes to state transportation dollars. And that's what I feel we're doing here, in my humble opinion.
Thank you, Representative Widener.
Just a quick question. On this amendment here, it appears that it's going to put
more oversight on the environmental impact studies. Is that correct, that are done for a new transportation project?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, the intention here is not to regulate the federal decision-making system that requires environmental impact statements for projects, but to regulate future land use planning by local communities. So it should not have a direct effect on the EIS, the environmental impact statement preparation process for a project that's proposed as part of a transportation investment plan. When those are federally funded projects, they become subject to that EIS requirement, but there's no direct bearing on the EIS preparation process in this legislation.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes, follow up.
Could this lead in to extending the time that a project could take place being tied up in court over land use laws?
Madam Chair, Representative Widener, there is no provision in here that should apply differently from existing law, which says that you use the laws that are in effect when a project is proposed to judge a project. So when a transportation investment is planned, if it's consistent with the then in effect transportation system plan that's part of the comprehensive plan, then it moves forward based upon that plan. It's the goalpost statute that this legislature adopted some decades ago. It says once you're underway, the rules that apply are the rules that were in effect when you first applied.
Okay. Seeing no other question, Commissioner Hostica.
Good afternoon. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Carl Hostica. I'm a member of the Metro Council representing parts of Washington County and Clackamas County. And I was asked to come down here and give Metro's sort of feelings about these amendments. And I think I could give you the very short version very quickly, which is Metro is happy to do whatever the legislature asks us to do as long as you provide the money for us to do it. And, you know, if you want more elaboration, I'm happy to go further. Basically, though, I do want to talk a little bit about what we're doing and why, how this fits into what we're doing. We're in the process right now of making decisions about urban and rural reserves, which is where urbanization would happen or not happen for the next 50 years. We're also looking at 20-year decisions about our urban growth boundary, when and if, where we would expand that. We're looking at the regional transportation plan, and we're looking at infrastructure finance and making investments within various parts of our region. All of those decisions have implications to greenhouse gases, and we have in the metropolitan region, both local governments and the Metro Council adopted a goal of making all those decisions in ways that minimize the contribution to global warming. Right now, that's just a goal, though, and we don't really have the kind of tools. We're working on tools to determine how our decisions will impact greenhouse gases. We have the state targets, but we really don't have any way of meshing those together right now, and I think that's what these amendments call for. So we're happy to participate in this process. We did have some concerns about timing, because all of those things that I just described have to be completed either in this year or next year, so that the original timing in these amendments was a bit of a problem for us. But since we've talked with Mr. Stacy and other people who are interested in these issues, we think the amendments that are before you today actually address most of our concerns. I think that it is appropriate to do this in the context of the transportation funding bills, because how that money gets spent will have very enormous implications on greenhouse gases, and I think we want to make sure that we do have some method either of assessing those impacts and planning to minimize them. And as Mr. Stacy mentioned, once a project or any set of projects is in the plan, it actually facilitates their adoption, because all the pre-work has been done. So with that, I would just say that whatever the legislature decides on this, we're happy to work with the legislature and the state governments to make it happen.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Just one quick question for Metro, and you may or may not know, but the dash 11s just says the commission shall reserve the funds identified under subsection 1 of this section eligible for non-highway purposes in the development of a statewide transportation improvement program. Do you see that reserving these funds, setting them aside, could actually take away from actually taking care of bottlenecks that are out there that are already in the process, and it's pulling more money out of what could be put to work on highways, highway projects?
Your question was, Madam Chair, Representative Widener, your question was whether that's possible. I think that anything is possible in that regard.
Well, and I guess my one question here is that I know, Mr. Stacy, that you have met with the director of LCDC, but I guess what's kind of obvious to me a little bit is that they aren't in the room, and we haven't heard anything from them. So I think that's maybe a missing piece for me to maybe get a feel for the fact that we're asking them to do this work, and they have not weighed in.
Madam Chair, Bob Stacy again. I most recently talked with Richard Whitman, the director of the department, about these amendments on Friday. He told me that the drafts that I had shared at that point with the home builders, Mr. Chandler, looked good to him. That's as close as I have to an endorsement by the department or their commission. I know that in the development of the transportation package, the Department of Land Conservation Development has been deferring to the Oregon Department of Transportation, but I'll be happy to contact Mr. Whitman and ensure that their position on these amendments is on the record.
Representative Schaffler.
Madam Chair, I'm sure Mr. Stacy would never come up and tell anything but the truth, but until those departments are sitting
of course,
doesn't really mean anything to me.
Could I make another comment, Madam Chair? Because of the implication that money that's invested in land use is somehow in competition or diminishes money that goes for transportation, I think we're trying to take the approach that a trip avoided is as good as a trip facilitated, and that basically what we're looking at is how to invest the money in developing our community so that people can meet their needs in an efficient and safe and livable manner. And if that involves having a community where you don't have to travel, that's as good as building a transportation facility which facilitates people's need to travel. And I think that viewing things in that context would make it that the money is not really in competition, but it's pursuing the same goals.
Thank you. Representative Widener.
Madam Chair, if I may, this is supposed to be a jobs and transportation bill. I see the dash 11s as bureaucracy and money not going out to create jobs and get us working on our roads and improving bottlenecks. So I'm a little hesitant with them, as Representative Schaffler is. So,
well, Madam Chair, please. First of all, I just want to make it clear. I don't think your goals and intentions here are wrong or misplaced. I'm just concerned about, be quite frank with you, we hear a lot about local control. Well, I'm here for state control. So there you go. Thank you, though.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
And just to echo the good counselor's comments, what this envisions is that a trip avoided is actually better than a trip facilitated. I mean, that's the reality of what we're talking about here. We can expand capacity by avoiding trips and therefore reduce greenhouse gas emissions and combat global climate change and have a real impact on it. That's what this envisions. And to my view of the way things are shaping up, you know, this might be one of the few pieces of legislation we get this session that actually addresses this pressing concern. And I really don't want to miss that opportunity. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, and that was all the amendments we had in front of us today. And so I'm going to go ahead and close the first session on House Bill 2001.
Madam Chair, before you do that, as I want to take advantage of the fact that our witnesses are walking away from the dais,
I just want to acknowledge that Councillor Hostica was one of my professors in at U of O in the Masters in Public Affairs program there. And while he's not accountable for my faults as a legislator, I think he deserves great credit for my virtues.
Thank you for that. I was, having come from my local area, I was going to ask him a question regarding how he thought my community would like this language, but I'm not going to put him on.
The area that I used to represent would favor it very much.
Probably your area would. And with that, I am going, I think I closed the work session. Oh yes, and we are carrying over House Bill 2001 for work session tomorrow, and the House Bills 3121 and 3379. And thank you, everybody. We are adjourned.